acute myocardial infarction. What does that mean? Well, you may be more familiar with its more common term, heart attack. This is Garrett Hall, and you're tuned in to another Shands Healthcast. Today we're talking about heart attacks, what they are, the signs and symptoms to look for, how to prevent them, and how UF physicians and surgeons have worked with local EMS personnel to ensure that heart attack victims are treated as quickly as possible. I'm joined today by two experts in cardiology and emergency medicine, Drs. Anderson and Joyce. Dr. Anderson, very glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Garrett. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And Dr. Joyce, a warm welcome to you.
Garrett, thank you so much. It's a true pleasure to be here today.
Well, listeners, stay tuned, and at the end of this healthcast, I'll tell you how to get in touch with UF cardiologists and cardiovascular surgeons. First, Dr. Anderson, define acute myocardial infarction.
Garrett, the medical term is acute myocardial infarction. The public is probably more familiar with the term heart attack. And what this represents is a narrowing of the artery to the heart muscle, or one of the arteries to the heart muscle, to the point where there is abrupt cessation of flow to a portion of the heart muscle that then leads to the symptoms and subsequently the consequences of an acute myocardial infarction or a heart attack.
Coronary artery disease, which is the narrowing of the arteries or blood vessels that feed the heart muscle and which can lead to a heart attack, is still a big problem in this country, as I understand it. And we still have a lot of work to do to get this problem under control, right?
In the United States alone, there are approximately 6 million people who have this disease process. It is estimated that approximately 900,000 to 1 million patients will have a heart attack annually, and of those, approximately 225,000 will die from their acute myocardial infarction or heart attack. Of that number of patients, 60% will die before they reach the hospital. Hence the initiative to try and educate the public about the signs and symptoms and streamlining our processes and care to get these patients treated as quickly as possible.
Dr. Joyce, you heard Dr. Anderson mention in his last response that we need to educate the public about the signs and symptoms of a heart attack. Let's talk about those for a moment.
When we talk about signs and symptoms of a heart attack, it is appropriate to discuss them as typical and atypical. Starting with the typical symptoms, patients will have chest pain, chest tightness, discomfort, jaw pain, left arm pain. Those are the typical symptoms that we tend to hear our patients talk about. The atypical symptoms are the ones that, as a physician, are more concerning, especially for patients that are diabetic or women, where you may have something that feels more like reflux or heartburn. It may be even something more onerous or alarming, as passing out or having a syncopal event.
Okay, Dr. Joyce, many of our listeners may not be familiar with the phrase syncopal event. What does that mean?
A syncopal event is defined as passing out, losing consciousness. And so patients may present with that uniquely as the precursor or the actual symptom of their heart attack.
All right, getting back to the signs and symptoms, Dr. Joyce, the ones you mentioned just a moment ago usually occur at the onset of an episode. But are there signs and symptoms that someone can be on the lookout for maybe in the days, weeks, or even months before an episode occurs?
Patients may have symptoms such as stuttering chest pain, where they'll be out in the yard and they'll have a little bit of pain and they stop exercising and the pain goes away. So those tend to be warning signs of an impending heart attack or an acute blockage that may be coming. That constellation of symptoms is known as angina or anginal chest pain.
Okay, Dr. Anderson, what about risk factors for a heart attack, which is different from the symptoms Dr. Joyce was just talking about? How can someone know if they're at risk? What are the typical risk factors for a heart attack?
The public may or may not be familiar with some of these, but they include high blood pressure, known in the medical community as hypertension, high cholesterol, known in the medical community as hyperlipidemia, diabetes, smoking, and genetics. Those are the most common risk factors. And the more of these risk factors that a patient has, the higher the likelihood that they will develop the disease and be at risk for a heart attack. The diabetic population bears mentioning here as well. Diabetics who do not have known heart disease are at the same risk of a heart attack as patients who have known underlying coronary artery disease.
And so for both of you, what's the message you want to get out to the public if they experience the signs and symptoms of a heart attack?
It's important to stress for patients that if you have symptoms, whether they fall into that typical class we talked about or the atypical or even those stuttering symptoms that are a warning of a future heart attack, that they not be ignored. We tend to see men predominantly more than women ignore a lot of these symptoms, especially in the days or weeks or months before the actual heart attack occurs. It's important to seek out medical advice so that we can prevent the actual event of a heart attack from occurring.
What's a person's first step if they experience the symptoms you mentioned earlier?
Classically, when a patient has a heart attack and they have those symptoms that we talked about of the chest pain or jaw pain, arm pain, they should immediately call 911. Waiting and hoping it goes away is really not the best thing to do, although many patients will try to minimize that symptom or those findings. Calling 911 as soon as you can will then help us at the hospital to expedite your care once you arrive to us.
I know you've spent a lot of time fine-tuning the process for when a person first makes the call to 911 complaining of chest pains to when they arrive at the hospital for treatment. A lot can happen in those early moments that can have a significant impact on potentially recovering from a heart attack. Dr. Anderson, talk about this process. The medical literature calls it the golden hour.
In the first 1 hour after the onset of symptoms of a heart attack, we have our best chance of giving the patient near normal survival. The longer the delay in getting patient into the system or beginning the process of care, the greater the risk of increasing mortality. There's a decrease in benefit in the effect of our treatment. Patients have larger heart attacks. They have a greater incidence of what we call shock, which is essentially failure of the heart as a pump. And there are subsequent complications or consequences down the road that the patient may suffer. Therefore, it is of the utmost importance that patients recognize their symptoms and have care initiated as early as possible.
What happens when a person who's having a heart attack because of blockage arrives at Shands at UF? What's the first step?
When we see a patient with an acute heart attack in the emergency department, there are several pathways that go into effect. The first thing that we do is obtain an electrocardiogram, the electrical tracings of the heart, to identify that truly there is an acute process that's going on. This happens at least within 10 minutes, if not sooner, for patients presenting with an acute change in symptoms or acute symptoms of a heart attack. Once we know that that is confirmed on the electrocardiogram, we then put out what's called a cardiac alert, which now activates the entire hospital process from the nursing staff to the cardiac cath lab, the cardiology attendings, the fellows, and everybody in between our process and the upstream process. The goal then is to really decrease the time between the arrival of the patient to us in the emergency department and their final venue at the cardiac catheterization lab. The other things that we do while we're awaiting the full team to be mobilized is to give the patient the aspirin if they haven't already received it. We will treat their symptoms with a host of medications as directed by the guidelines of the American College of Cardiology. We will also obtain a chest x-ray to make sure that there's not another process in the chest that could be causing the same kinds of symptoms. And then we try to keep the patient as comfortable as possible and perfuse that artery as best as we can in the emergency department until they can get the further intervention that they need.
You mentioned taking an aspirin. Is that a myth or does that actually help?
The way that aspirin acts is by preventing blood cells from sticking further to each other, which in an acute heart attack situation where there's already a clot that is now unstable, let's say in the heart artery, you don't want there to be more blood cells arriving and sticking and making a bigger clot. The only caveat to this is some patients are actually allergic to aspirin.
And of course, in that case, they shouldn't take one. Well, thanks, Dr. Joyce. I want to go back to the cardiac catheterization lab. You mentioned that in your recent response. Dr. Anderson, what happens when a patient arrives there?
What we have found is that the way to reduce the mortality and the morbidity associated with this disease process is to open up the artery, the blood vessel to the heart muscle, as soon as possible. We bring patients into what is called the cardiac catheterization suite. They are placed on a table which is narrow and flat and covered with a sterile drape. We then introduce a very small catheter into the blood vessel system. And a catheter is just a small tube that allows us to go up to the heart inject dye in the arteries, find out which of the heart arteries or heart blood vessel has the blockage, and then we can proceed with the process of opening up that blockage. It's a simple process whereby we use a small balloon to open up the blockage, and then we have other treatment options to maintain the open blood vessel so that blood flow is restored to the muscle, the heart muscle downstream. And the sooner we are able to achieve this, the lower the consequences will be for the patient suffering from his or her heart attack.
Is the balloon you mentioned the same thing as a stent?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
I'm not sure if our listeners are aware of the difference. Go ahead and explain.
In the catheterization laboratory, the technique is called percutaneous revascularization. All that means is we are opening up the blood vessel using a technique that involves balloons and little devices called stents. When I describe stents to my patients, I tell them to look at the spring inside a ballpoint pen, which is very similar to what a stent looks like in real life. We open up the artery almost always initially with a balloon. Then we will most often put in a stent. The balloon helps us open the artery initially, but the stent maintains the artery in its open position. We then withdraw the balloon and the stent stays in place.
Dr. Joyce, are there things someone can do to try to prevent a heart attack?
For those patients that we described as having those anginal symptoms or those stuttering chest pain symptoms from exercising in the yard or on the treadmill or walking to work or whatever it might be that precipitates those symptoms, it's important that those patients go and have an immediate evaluation, either with a primary care physician through the emergency department if that might be the case. What we would do in that circumstance is start with an electrocardiogram, which is essentially electrical tracings of the heart that allow us to look for areas that may have blockages already in them or that may be impending with a blockage. And then we also gather some blood work to look at any enzymes or markers that the heart may be spilling to let us know that indeed the muscle is damaged or is becoming damaged. And then lastly, would be to get a stress test where we essentially at the hospital or in an office recreate those stress symptoms either by exercise or by giving patients medication to then put the heart into a stressed situation so we can recreate their symptoms and better evaluate what's going on with the muscle.
And what happens after those tests?
If those tests turn out to be positive, meaning that a stress test shows that there is an area of the heart with a blockage or decreased perfusion or blood flow, then the patient is referred to a cardiologist. The next step would be to undergo a cardiac catheterization where you actually have a better look at all the arteries of the heart so you can assess the degree of blockage in all of the major arteries of the heart. And then subsequent to that, depending on how many arteries are involved, the patient may need to undergo a open heart surgery. But again, those are things that are more downstream that are done between the cardiologist and a cardiothoracic surgeon.
Dr. Anderson, talk about the Shands at UF difference and the difference that UF physicians and surgeons bring to the table in terms of caring for heart attack patients.
At Shands Hospital at the University of Florida, we have a very large cardiovascular division with diverse interests. Many of our faculty are nationally or internationally recognized, and there's a very wide participation in research. We have spent an enormous amount of time working with the local and regional emergency medical services personnel, as well as our emergency physician colleagues, to streamline the process of care for patients with an acute myocardial infarction or heart attack. We currently meet or exceed all the national guidelines in the treatment of these patients, and we feel our process has been very well optimized.
Dr. Joyce, anything to add to that? What makes this program unique?
Several of our emergency medical service providers actually can now send us an EKG, the electrocardiogram, from the patient's home or from the scene where they have picked up the patient. Again, this cuts down on the time that it takes for us now to intervene once the patient arrives at the hospital. It is an ongoing process for us in which we take great pride. And many of our physicians not only have an interest in cardiovascular emergencies, but also focus their specialty in emergency medicine on the acute treatment of cardiac emergencies.
No doubt this is information that can save lives. I want to thank our listeners for tuning into this HealthCast, and a special thanks to you, Dr. Anderson.
Garrett, thank you for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
And to you, Dr. Joyce.
Garrett, thanks. It's been a great session with you today.
Well, I appreciate you both taking the time to speak with me today. Remember, listeners, if you'd like to schedule a new patient appointment with a UF heart care professional at Shands, please call us toll-free at 866-931-1185. A professional service representative will be happy to connect you with the appropriate appointment scheduler within our system. Please remember that this toll-free number is only to schedule a new patient appointment. Well, that's all for now. This is Garrett Hall. Take care. Thank you for listening to Shands HealthCast. Shands Healthcare will continue to provide healthcasts covering a wide variety of general health issues. If you would like to subscribe to Shands Healthcast or would like more information on this or other topics, please visit shands.org/healthcast. Shands Healthcare is a private, not-for-profit healthcare system affiliated with the University of Florida. Shands includes 8 hospitals, an affiliated network of more than 80 UF primary and specialty clinical practices, and a medical staff of more than 1,500 UF faculty and community physicians. For more information about our hospital system, visit shands.org. There you'll find an illustrated medical health encyclopedia, care guides for specific conditions such as diabetes and high blood pressure, maps and directions, information about all Shands hospitals and services, and links to other healthcasts. UF and Shands, the science of hope.